Hello and welcome to the Writer's Block. Yes, it's the Writer's Block, the first Writer's Block of the year of our Lord 2022. And with me here, I have an exciting lineup just for you to bring in the new year, to halloo the new year as it comes in. We have, starting right now at 10 p.m. Central European time, with the Posh Crew. The Posh Crew being the intellectuals, the highly cultured, the very, very well-learned company with which I shall converse in order to elevate myself on this here Writer's Block. And of course, these people are here to answer your questions and to tell us about the past year, what they did, what they think is so important. Have they perhaps learned anything that we can do? We are streaming live on the Countercurrents, DLive, and Odyssey channels. And it's one of those days, people. It's a Sunday, and that means the Writer's Block. And with me here, I have my trusty mug of Alaska Chaga, the nice fungal tea, the NFT of the distant right, the tonic which keeps the Writer's Block going and my lame puns are rolling. So without further ado, I would like to introduce the Posh Crew, the lineup which will redeem our intellect. And let's start with Dr. Greg Johnson, the editor.
Hello. It's Dr. great being Johnson. On the show.
And well, of course, with us is also the War Mage, James O'Meara. James, am I glad to see you, or did I just put a canoe in my pocket?
Woof!
A little Blackadder reference there for anyone who got it.
Yes, indeed. Good to be here. Good to be here, chaps.
Yes. And Catherine, I forget myself. I always forget myself when there's a lady present, but we have the spear wife, the strategist, Catherine. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Happy to be here, too.
Excellent. And, of course, coming to the show from the land where Constantine is roaring, and that's the lamest multilingual pun you will hear all year, Mark Gullick, PhD OMIC. How are you doing, Mark? Yes, Mark and Costa Rican traffic are with us in spirit, if nothing else.
I'm doing fine. Sorry, I'm trying to mute the mic when I'm not actually talking, so to keep a little bit of the traffic out of the conversation. But nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I don't personally mind it. I find the sound of roaring motorcycles without mufflers to be part of this show's charm. Well, anyways, that's me and my lame nicknames and introductions done with. So let's start with Greg. Greg, you got to tell me, what have you been doing this past year while I've been goofing around here on the Countercurrents and DLive and Odyssey chats and channels? Have you done anything which you consider really outstanding in the year 2021?
Oh, yeah. I've done many, many outstanding things in 2021. It was a pretty good year. I published a book earlier this year. I only managed to publish one book this year of my own. And that was The Year America Died, about 2020. And we had the best traffic ever in Countercurrents history. I'm getting all the stats together to report about that soon. And we also had our best fundraiser ever. We raised close to $220,000 this year. So those were all good things. And one of the reasons the fundraiser went pretty well is I learned how to ask for money better. And I learned by consulting with some professionals. And so that worked out very, very well for me. Just a second. Right. And so we are doing quite well. And I've hired some new staff, which we introduced to you all yesterday, Robert Wallace and Cyan Quinn. They're working behind the scenes at Countercurrents to make things work better. So I'm thinking 2022 is going to be an even better year. So it's been a great year. I guess the big lesson for the movement is raise money and professionalize and build a well-oiled machine. It'll make us all more productive and give us much more clout.
That is fascinating. And of course, by professional, Greg means the local hobos. They've been teaching him all about separating people from their money. It is a fine art. You gotta run the full gamut of persuasion, from death threats to begging on your knees. But it is what keeps the lights on here at Countercurrents, and what keeps me well oiled with a nice fungal tea. Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate you, Greg Johnson, and Countercurrents for providing me with the framework through which to inflict myself upon the world, if not express myself and contribute something to this new movement. So anyone who is sick of my annoying puns and self-aggrandizement, you got Greg Johnson to thank for it. And I want to sincerely thank you for that, Greg. You are what makes the writer's block possible. And I appreciate that, if I haven't said that before.
Well, you know, I'm increasingly just sort of like the impresario. It's the writers who make the writer's block possible. It's all of you guys who are in the call with me, plus the many other writers we have. You know, I just sort of created the ring, and I'm letting you fill up the platform. I wrote about, I think, exactly 40 things last year, but we published well over 1,000 pieces at Countercurrents. It's certainly not a one-man show at all. And so all the writers really make the writer's block possible, and I really appreciate you for being the host. I think it's a great concept, and it's developed really nicely.
Yeah. It is something I look forward to every week. I mean, it gives me motivation to go into the shower, if anything else. But it is what it is. It is what it is. It's been a good year for me as well. But you're right. It's the writers that make this thing possible, that make this show possible. And it's been the best year ever, I believe, also for Mr. James O'Mara. Now, Seamus of Clan Umedra, he's a tireless war mage. He's been trying to bring the magic of Mr. Neville Goddard to the masses. James, what do you think was your biggest achievement this year? And you think we learned any lessons, any important lessons this year?
Oh, well, there's so many achievements to choose from. Well, of course, speaking of publishing things, Countercurrents and so on, my latest collection of things came out this year, Passing the Buck, on the metaphysics of bad movies. It's flying off the shelves. I took a check just now on Amazon. It's number 761 in science fiction and number 708 in mysticism, which, you know, is not the top 10, of course, but when they're selling millions of books, I think it's a fairly good performance.
You're going up against some pretty steep competition over there in the science fiction department.
Exactly. I think the fact that it's on both the science fiction and mysticism lists gives you listeners out there an idea of how wide it ranges. Speaking of listeners, another great achievement this year was finally appearing on the writer's block, the Nick Jilvey's top 10 broadcast. We did that on Halloween, I think.
We did a spooky writer's block.
The spooky writer's block, indeed.
I had face paint on. That was the spookiest bit.
Yes. What was I going to mention? Oh, I have to mention another book that came out this year, one of those expensive academic publisher type books from Routledge, Contemporary Far-Right Thinkers and the Future of Democracy. It has chapters on some of our favorite people. There's a chapter on Frody. There's a chapter on Jason Giorgiani. And there's a chapter on Bronze Age Pervert, which is a very interesting chapter because the author writes under the assumption that he has revealed Bronze Age Pervert's identity, and apparently it's me. Official academic recognition here of my many achievements in that era. What else do we have?
That's very interesting, because I've been following Bronze Age Pervert around. So it's been you posting all those nude men on Twitter.
Well, this prominent academic says so, so it must be true. And he bases his information on the review that was published in Countercurrents. So it's a top rate source of information there. Of course, I couldn't possibly comment on that. To make things seem a little bit less egocentric in terms of what happened this year and so on, I think for us in the plural, the remarkable implosion of the Biden or the Brandon administration, there was a lot of worry about all the totalitarian measures that they would bring in, and they seem to be too stupid to accomplish anything. So it's quite a something of a white pill, if you will. And this seems to be going along with a sort of implosion of the COVID narrative. You see more and more examples of people, admitting that it needs to stop, basically. So I think at this point they're sort of like circling their wagons and trying to figure out how do we make it stop. The thing that occurred to me today actually is that it's going to be blame Biden. They're going to blame the whole thing on Biden. He was senile and old, and he got scared and panicked. And they have lots and lots of videotape of Kamala Harris in 2020 saying she'd never take Trump's vaccine. So she's already positioned to come forward as the, I was a loyal vice president, but it just got too far. And then in this sort of like death of Stalin sort of way, they'll Biden will go out feet first, and they'll put Kamala in, and she'll be popular because, as Beria says in Death of Stalin, you know, somebody says to him, "You put half the nation in prison." And he says, "Yes, and I'm letting them out."
I don't know if you've seen that film, but you know what happens to Beria in the end.
yes, indeed. But we'll see. We'll see. There are signs of hope in there. These what I call Cronkite moments or Tet moments, like when the elite suddenly splits and starts sending out signals, like when Walter Cronkite suddenly announced, Vietnam's not going too well. And then suddenly everybody started talking about how we had to get out. The Tet Offensive supposedly was actually a tremendous defeat for the Viet Cong, but it occurred at just the right moment for people like Cronkite to grab onto it and say, see, we're losing, let's get out. And, Omicron might be that moment for the COVID business. It's, the media tried to blow it up into a new plague, and it turned out to be a bust, and it may actually increase natural immunity, and they may be looking for an opportunity. You also started seeing stories about how Fauci was a dog killer and things like that. So, and RFK Jr.'s book that dredges up all the HIV stuff that Fauci was involved in as well. So, it's the sort of stuff you wouldn't say about Beria when he was in good graces. So maybe we're seeing a sea change there. But that's my suggestion for a great achievement for us this past year.
Right. That's an interesting point you raised, that one of the most important thing that has happened in 2021 is the implosion of the left's narrative. And I mean, this has been observed by many people. We aren't so much red pilling the normies as we are providing a framework for them to turn to once the system disillusions them, disappoints them with its own inadequacy of narrative and inability to deliver on, well, the most basic aspects of governance, such as a sane response to what has turned out to be a mild disease for the vast majority of the public. That's something to chew on. That's something I would we should chew on as a panel. But I do believe that we should introduce Catherine and ask her about her year. Now, Catherine, if you would allow me to suggest to call your Hannibal and Scipio Africanus article the high point of your year, although I'm certain you would disagree, but do take it away. What do you think was the most important thing you did all year? And you think we got any lessons we have learned as a movement, you personally?
Well, I did really like that article that I read. It was really fun to write. When I read about the Battle of Cannae, of course, I'd heard of it before. But when I read about it, I was like, man, wow, this, I don't think I've heard of a worse battle that took place in the day before like this one did. And so it really got me reading about ancient history more, which is one accomplishment that I liked. And I'm still kind of doing that because my knowledge in especially Rome, I think, needed a touch up. I've always liked ancient history, but I am glad that I kind of went back and did that. And that Cannae article was sort of, well, I read all of this stuff. I should probably do something productive with it. So I read that article. My favorite article is probably from the very beginning, the Port, Plain, and Mountain essay that I did. There are other articles that, you know, more or less proud of. Some of them are just kind of like, eh. You go back and read your stuff and you're like, eh, okay, well. I mean, but for the most part, I'm proud of what I wrote for Countercurrents. And to echo you, I really do thank Greg Johnson and Countercurrents for providing a venue for that. Because it's throughout this whole COVID thing really been kind of a godsend to kind of redirect some of the energy, some of the academic energy that I left behind and have something to do with it.
Well, by the way, I have not read any of your articles and thought, ugh. I think they're all really quite interesting and quite polished. And they're articles that I could never have written myself. And that recommends them to me really highly. I learn a lot from your work, and it's very well written too.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. But what else have I done? I got engaged, and I don't know if that's necessarily an achievement, but I do love Matt very much, and he's a good man as well as, you know, as smart or smarter than I am. So that's, you know, what more can I ask for? He's taller. And he has a beard like you, Nick. He had a beard like you, too, when you had a long beard. I think we talked about that before. He did his Russian author phase there for a little bit. Or his Civil War general phase there for a little bit. And let's see. I finally got around to watching the HBO series Rome, which I'd started watching it back in, 2009. And I was really appalled. I guess I wasn't used to just sort of the graphic nature of it. But as I've gotten older, maybe so. I've watched a few episodes of Game of Thrones and it kind of prepared me for it. Wow, it's, did I like it? I don't know. It's such a dude show. It's a very dude show. Dudes doing cool things. But I sort of liked it. And I also kind of read books that I'd tried to start reading before and never finished, like The Silmarillion. It's not kind of a great work of literature, I don't think, but it was sort of Tolkien's mythology. And did sort of finish that and kind of broadened, I guess, the whole world that he was building for me. And I do like The Lord of the Rings, so... there was that. As far as the movement goes, I think I was probably pretty naive. I don't see myself as an optimist, but I guess maybe I am. I thought that Derek Chauvin was not going to be charged with all the things that he was charged for. I thought he was going to get off with a lesser sentence. I really did. So that was sort of a letdown. And I think the Rittenhouse is sort of eclipsed that now, and that was a victory. But I really thought Derek Chauvin was just going to get off on maybe like a negligence sort of thing. And I do kind of want to echo James O'Meara's and your conversation before that I think the country is sort of starting to understand that for most of the world, most of the time, instability is the norm. And America's kind of led a charmed existence for the past 100 years, all through the 20th century, really. And I think that that's sort of coming to an end now. And that means that it's a dangerous but also an opportunity for us to present what we have, the truth that we have, and to get more people on our side. There was a really interesting article a couple of days ago about whether we should focus on COVID or whether we should focus on the Great Replacement. And I think the tendency is to really kind of focus on COVID as the immediate reality. But the Great Replacement is going on right as we speak. You know, it is also the immediate reality. So we need to combat these things as not two separate things, but they are combined as one. So I think that's probably our greatest challenge in the coming year.
That's an interesting position. My position on it is that while the COVID tyranny is the more urgent issue, the Great Replacement is by far the more pressing issue. It's like, I can come up with a medical metaphor later on, but I will say I am also captivated by the show Rome and by I, Claudius, the excellent British series, precisely because it depicts a time in Roman history where things began to unravel and instability once again became the norm for the citizens of Rome, where it is one of these transitional periods between the early expansion of Rome and the later establishment of the Pax Romana under the emperors. It was a time of great upheaval and great change. But we can chew on that later as a panel. But now I would like to bring in Mark. Hello, Mark, and Costa Rican traffic. I got to ask you, what do you think was the high point of your year, most important thing you did? And what do you think, what are the lessons you personally have learned and, you know, our movement could have learned or should have learned maybe?
Well, I'm going to follow suit without groveling too much. Definitely the high point of the year is forming a closer alliance with Countercurrents, because I always recount the Jonathan Bowden line about it being an online university, and that's so close to what it actually is. It might be an idea actually to start an online university. I don't know what kind of license you need, but no. So that was without question the high point. Achievements wise, I've been fairly reclusive here and got back into going back to I read a lot of philosophy or secondhand philosophy online, which was clearly people who'd read something about philosophy or seen a sort of bite-sized internet tutorial about Hegel or whatever it was. You have to go back to the source texts with philosophy. You can't do a pop-up version or a for dummies version, I don't think. And I finally, after all these years, started the philosophy book I've always promised myself that I'd write, having realized that I've got hundreds of pages of notes without realizing. I always annotate books, always have done. People are going to get secondhand books in thrift future and think, what is that strange M in the margin there next to that? I wonder what that is. So I was pretty pleased about that. In terms of the movement, firstly, what's always frustrated me about the movement is the fact that it is still rife with internal squabbles and backbiting, and you know, who is in the movement, who isn't in the movement. Is Ben Shapiro a bad guy this week? Is he a good guy this week? And everyone's got their views on all these different things. I see the movement increasingly as, I don't really understand the game, but it's probably a better metaphor than English soccer. American football, everybody on the team has a very specific role to play. Yeah, and then they go on to them. And it would be a good thing, I think, if anybody who is, you know, on our side, and I do see it as a question of size, I think we all do, even if that side is only defined by what you're not, it would be a little bit, I think more progress would be made if cohesiveness came through the recognition of difference. I was just reread or browsing through, really, Orwell's Homage to Catalonia, where he goes off to to fight Franco and gets himself shot in the throat, so on and so forth. And he said one of the things that really depressed him when he got there was not, you know, the fact that Franco's guys were 200 or 300 yards away shooting at him, but the fact that the people supposedly on his side were all arranged in little factions, and they were all squabbling, and, you know, it was regional, and it was to do with dialect, and it was to do with football teams, so on and so forth. And his view was, look, you know, let's look that way, where the bullets are coming from, and not worry too much about beating each other up in the trenches or worrying about our internal differences. Politically, it's quite odd for me, because I'm from England, and I'm quite close to the United States, and yet I'm not in either. So I'm sort of swivel-eyed, keeping an eye on both of them. And I have become much more, I hope I've become much more knowledgeable about American politics. I did read de Tocqueville this year, which was just absolutely fascinating. I didn't realize, or I didn't grasp quite what a new venture this was, or your country was. You know, really just building democracy from lashing together the sticks of democracy. It's quite an incredible account of that. And the most fascinating thing, and the most fascinating difference I found between the two, not systems of government, well, no, not systems of governance, because they have them in both countries, but the way that they're gone about is, there are cross-parliamentary committees in Britain where people are hauled up and asked to explain, you know, why they defunded the fire service in that shire over there, or whatever it might be, right up to the governmental level. But it's more quite polite and British. You know, you get the impression there's plenty of tea drinking going on. Switch to the American version, and I was absolutely riveted. We all know that the Democrats have their irritating little squad of Cortez and Rashid and Omar and the other one, his name I forget.
They're all American names, by the way. All right.
Right.
Yeah, Cortez, well, actually, and Rashid and Omar.
Well, Rashid, yeah. Actually, my Spanish teacher would say that Cortez was an American name, because he gets annoyed when I say America. He says I should say North America, but he's not here, so he can just bow out of that.
Cortez argument. Is a Spanish name, right? One which has been
correct.
Yeah, appropriated correct. By this Indian woman, I might add.
But I'm fascinated to watch what I think of as the Republican squad, which is Cotton, Jordan, Gaetz, I think that's how you pronounce his name, G-A-E-T-Z, or Z, you would say, Kennedy, and Rand Paul. I mean, they really grill people like Fauci and the health. You know, they really don't let them off the hook. They make them squirm, and I think that's how adversarial politics should be done. That's my soap opera, the American congressional hearings.
That is fascinating. Although, it is important to read the actual texts themselves, like the actual philosophical texts themselves, Mark. I will say, if people are looking for a bite-sized chunk of philosophy and a digested, chewed over, and very well digested reading of Hegel, you should go no further than From Plato to Postmodernism by Greg Johnson. I actually have it in this house, but it's upstairs, and I am nailed to this chair for the duration. And it's my copy is wonderfully dog-eared, also signed by Dr. Johnson. But it is one of those great introduction to philosophy books. And, you know, in the coming year, things might transpire from my end towards in that direction, I should say. But okay, so that's everyone introduced, everyone with their lessons learned and their great achievements. So I think that James really opened something interesting for us to discuss, and that is the question of the process by which our movement grows, the disillusionment with the really abhorrent way in which our countries are run and the world is governed. And this can tie in, of course, with the soap opera that Mark mentions, that the soap opera of politics. People are beginning to realize that this is actually not the real thing. That, yeah, it's a good show, but ultimately, what are Rand Paul and Tom Cotton going to do to these gigantic forces arrayed against us? And that ties into what Catherine says about we are entering a time of great instability, and finally, why we need the infrastructure, which Dr. Johnson is so meticulously constructing to make hay out of this particular thing going on. So if anyone in the panel would like to speak to this, I give the floor to you. Well, let's start with James. You opened this can of worms.
I didn't know it was a can of worms until you you interpreted it in that fashion.
Well, you know,
my God, I opened a can of worms.
I'm a speaker of English as a second language. I'm going to mangle these idioms to the great amusement of the audience, I might add. It is becoming one of those newfangled memes people are talking about all the time.
Yeah, that's always your response when you mangle some English idiom. Your fallback is, I was making a pun, you dolt. You just didn't get it. But I mean, other than what I've already said, I don't know how much else I can. And you know, I mean, just as an example, I mean, without taking any position on the idea that the vaccine is deadly, although that's an issue that people have with it. You know, if people, no matter what the government says. You know, for instance, Trudeau yesterday had his Christmas message. You know, Biden's Christmas message was "Welcome to the Winter of Death." Trudeau had a Christmas message where he described the unvaccinated as ignorant and needing to be dealt with, and which was interesting because officially in Canada it's 90% vaccinated. So you wonder, like, what's the problem? You know, you would think they would be easygoing, you know, at that point, but they're still obsessed with it, which suggests that the official data is bogus. You know, it's not 90% vaccinated, otherwise they wouldn't be so panicky about it. And, you know, the disconnect between what people see in their ordinary lives and the official narrative keeps delegitimizing the official narrative. And so, you know, if your relatives are starting to die off after getting vaccinated, at some point you start not paying attention. You start figuring out that what you're getting in the media is lies. You know, if there were actually bodies in the street, people wouldn't be talking about, I don't want to get vaccinated. They'd be demanding to be vaccinated. You know, the ruinous inflation, which is higher than it's been since the days of Jimmy Carter, you know, affects people directly. And, you know, when Biden and Harris come out about how, you know, everything's fine and there is no inflation, they asked Harris a couple of days ago a question about, what about inflation? And she gave this ridiculous answer that was just like literally word salad. It's like worthy of Biden himself. She had literally no clue as to what she was saying. You know, these people are dumb. And they're not well informed, and they don't need to be. They don't think they need to be because they're running things, you know. So obviously they must be at the top of the heap in the meritocracy. But when things start breaking down, people start to notice the gap between what these people are shoveling out and what they see when they go to buy groceries, and what they see when their family members start sickening. So that I think maybe going on, and at some point, you know. As I said, you know, there seems to be a faction in the elite that's starting to say we've gone too far and we have to dial this back, and people may start turning to that, just like the anti-war movement in America grew during the 60s, when you know, the war was suddenly in your living room on the evening news, and Walter Cronkite, the most trusted man in America, was saying, you know, maybe this was a mistake. And at that point, you know, you start doing incredible things like the president of the United States, who won the biggest electoral victory of all time prior to Biden, loses the New Hampshire primary and withdraws from the electoral race. You know, unheard of. We may be seeing something like that. You know, that's my gold pill or white pill or whatever the good news is, because they don't seem to be able. You know, there's always that myth that's all about, you know, the Nazis being ultra efficient and marching around and making everything work and so on, et cetera, et cetera. And our guys don't seem to be like that. They seem to destroy everything they touch, rather than creating some sort of ultra efficient and unconquerable panopticon of some sort. It's actually falling into pieces. So that's what I have to offer. I just might offer one other thing. I saw a map of America in the 1830s, and I think that's now my model for what the solution to our problem is that we need to the real problem started with Manifest Destiny. So if you look at the map of America in the 1830s, this is before the Mexican War, the huge swath of the Southwest is Mexico. The upper left coast is disputed territory with Britain. So that's Washington, Oregon, and British Columbia, and so on. And then you have, the American heartland. Yeah. If we could go back to those borders, you know, just give it all back to Mexico. Give the other part back to Britain. Say, yeah, you were right. You know, we're sorry we disputed this territory. It's yours now.
Oh, not Texas, James.
No. We may have to make some sacrifices, but
we're not sacrificing.
No, you see,
he's trying to give away the West Coast, your precious West Coast.
Exactly, the West Coast and Southwest and Louisiana and all that. Just give it all away. Give that back to France. And I don't think
the French would know what to do with it. They would probably just construct more nuclear power plants.
Sure. Somebody once said the French only know four cities in America. They know, or four places in America. They know Harlem, New Orleans, Hollywood, which is a place where Legere lives. And, I can't remember the fourth one, so I'm even worse than that.
It's obviously Paris, Texas.
I was going to say, when I was in Paris, they knew exactly where I was from. Well, not exactly. Maybe they couldn't point to it on a map, but they knew what Texas was.
They knew Texas. Oh, I'm sorry. You are absolutely right. You are absolutely right. The city, the fourth city I couldn't remember was Dallas because of JR. That was the four cities that they know. But I thought people would object immediately by saying, well, what about the liberal Northeast? Well, we still have problems with them. Well, you know, we'll be able to handle them. You know, it's a much smaller problem than having both the East and the West Coast. There'll be less for them to bitch about because, you know, we gave everything back to the Hispanics and to the Indians and so on. And, you know, what can they complain about now? So, well,
people find a way.
Yeah, these people do definitely find ways to complaining. I am a big supporter of Cal Exit. I think that America's problems would be solved tremendously simply by losing California. As much as I like California, it has, 55 solid blue electoral votes, a very large number of the non-white population are in California. And even a lot of the whites in California are sort of off-white peoples from the Middle East and so forth. So it would change. Just California leaving the union would change the electoral dynamics in the rest of the country and the demographic dynamics in the rest of the country. It would really give us a few decades of extra time to get the great replacement under control in the rest of the country. And yes, New York wouldn't be as problematic if we didn't have California.
California is the voice of New York. So if you take out the voice, you might actually win over a good deal of heritage Americans. And it is 10:40 here in Central Europe, which means that the time for the posh crew, it has expired. So I'm going to say bye-bye to you guys, except for James. James, there is an entropy question which has come for you. For $3 American, you are not yet free of your bondage, sir. Sunshine Kid asks for $3 American. Mr. Omira, last time you were on the writer's block, Uh-oh. You proposed pagans or non-Christians join the Christian church. Could you expand a bit about what exactly you mean by that? Now, I see Greg has bowed out. Hold that thought, James and Catherine and Mark, if you would just say your goodbyes, and I can bring in the second crew.
Well, thanks for having me on, Nick. Remember the Alamo, James. Remember the Alamo, 1836.
I shall.
Yes. And Mark.
Likewise. Thank you so much. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm sorry about the third world IT. Thanks for putting up with that. And I look forward to the next one. And Happy New Year to all of you.
Right. And so to Catherine and Mark, I say goodbye. Let me just push these buttons here. James, sure. If you would answer the question while I bring in the action crew.
Well, all I meant by that was that, there's always this discussion on the right or, this kind of right of, is Christianity the problem? Do we have to get rid of Christianity? Can we do something with Christianity? Should we all become Christians, et cetera? And I suggested that it's been a long time idea of mine that, the difficulty of reconstructing what paganism actually was anyway, and Christianity has become so much a part of the Western world that we really need to keep it at least formally, and we should be inspired by those evangelical Christians who complain that Catholicism is just paganism anyway, and simply re-inhabit the mythology and the structures and so on. There's no reason why we can't be professedly Christian and privately pagan, if you will, or indeed that there's a way of interpreting the religion in such a way that it's effectively pagan. Because many, many professed Christians actually claim that much of Christianity is just paganism. I say we take that. That's the easy route. Now, Greg ran off as soon as he heard this question because his response to me has always been that our enemies are better liars than we are. And so we can't try to outlie them. We can't try to, pretend to be Christians and secretly be pagans or Satanists or whatever we want to be. But that's what I meant by that statement earlier in response to this fine gentleman's $3 entropy question.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that reasoned response, James. And my response to that is apostolic Christianity is far more pagan than people think. You should give it a try. You should try. James and I we could talk for 5 hours if I just told him all the rites involved in Macedonian Christmas. It's really, there's a lot of wood burning. We burn oak branches. We jump over fire. We prepare food for 3 days, but it's got to be nuts and fish. And something about baby Jesus at the end. Just feels tacked on the bit about baby Jesus. But it is the way my people have celebrated Christmas for 2,000 years. I'm not going to argue against that. So it is what it is. But James, thank you for participating in the best year yet writer's block extravaganza. And with that, woof, woof. What can I say? How did Lord Flashheart exit a scene?
Kaboom!
Kaboom!
Yes. Flash.
If you want something, get it.
Yes.
And with that, we have concluded the posh part of the writer's block best year yet extravaganza. We are now welcoming the action crew. We have here Mr. Jim Goad, and the best part of him is covered with a very snazzy hat. How do you do, Mr. Goad?
I'm in my Ukrainian Uber driver outfit for this occasion. Feeling good. Thanks for asking.
Well, you can drive me over a cliff anytime you want, Mr. Goad. Thelma. And with us here also is Mr. Richard Hauk. I hear he prefers Rich these days. How do you do, fine sir?
Hey, not too bad. How you guys doing?
Excellent. We are doing fine. I'm all hopped up on Alaska Chaga and Well, I'm ready to party, you could say. With us also is Thomas Steuben. Now, Mr. Steuben, I have selected an avatar for you since you do not have a customary one. I do believe you like it. Tom?
I do indeed. It might be my new avatar from now on, so you have good taste.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. I already knew that, but it's good to hear it from an independent source. And with us, of course, here is the King of the Jannies, Mr. Building a Third Force himself, Gadius Maximus, absolute lord of the chat. And I see he has dolled himself up for me. How nice of you to do that, Gadius.
How's it going, Nix? I ain't seen you since last year, buddy. You're sight for sore eyes.
That's a 3-kid minimum joke, so you better get busy, Mr. Gadius. And that is and I thought I was going to have the lamest jokes of all stream. Well, that's the Action Crew, and I have named you guys the Action Crew because you are notorious for taking action in the real world. Now, all the phone there, we do not mean all the crazy stuff that all those people in who shouldn't be doing anything did. We are talking about concrete and specific real world action, which actually moves our movement forward, which actually moves distant thought and activity forward. And as usual, I want all of you to open with, what have you been doing this past year? What do you think was the best thing you did this year? What do you think are some lessons you personally have learned and we as a movement have, or at least should have learned? Let's start here by rule of sonority. Mr. Goad, would you please take it away?
Ageist. I'm curious what action you think I've ever taken, because when I was listening to everyone else, like I completely space out on COVID and Republicans and Democrats and just deal with logic and philosophy. So what action have I taken besides fighting anti-racist skinheads in the streets 20 years ago?
Well, that's pretty action to me. Okay. I mean, we could make a Rambo movie about your life, I think. Let's call it Platehead.
I'm glad and I'm proud that I didn't write a word about COVID this year. It's one of those that there's such a blizzard of information and misinformation. And I think people, they gather around their belief clusters. The right, you know, is suspicious. The left is gullible about it. Left it completely alone. I've had fun doing things like with the Atlanta spa shooting here in Georgia. I just flipped the narrative. It's like, well, it's obviously the problem is there are too many Asian prostitution massage parlors. It had nothing to do with the guy being white. And, you know, in his own words, he killed 2 white people. Or recently, just about every week, I'm talking about black serial killers, and I'm trying to rehabilitate them. The black serial killers who have no criminal record, who are like real estate investors, things like that. For the worst week yet that's coming out tomorrow, I'm sure other people have tackled it, but I crunched some of the numbers Steve Saylor like. It's the Human Rights Campaign. It's a website. They tallied the total number of trannies murdered over the past 2 years. You would think they'd be generous with the numbers. It was 94. The number of homicide victims in America over the last 2 years was close to 40,000. Now, you can't really measure a delusion, but they say 6 out of every 1,000 Americans identifies as a different gender, non-binary. Actually, they're being murdered at a rate 1/3 of the average American. You are 1/3 less likely to be murdered if you're a tranny. Then I also looked at the numbers too. I mean, 55% of self-identified transgender adults are white. But as far as the murder victims, it's like 10%. Overwhelmingly black guys who think they're women. And this is where I got into the speculative realm, because you can't find, you know, and on a deadline, you can't really find the hard statistics. Who's killing them? If you look at Google Images, you know how they stack their algorithm. The first couple rows are white perpetrators, you know, trans murder suspect. But then it's black guy after black guy. So I just speculated. I think in a lot of these cases, I would take a MacArthur grant to research this over a year. I think a lot of these cases, it's when a guy takes a prostitute home and realizes it has a penis and kills them. So just, I mean, taking things at different angles that no one else is approaching, I think is where I get my bones, as they say in Philly.
Well, I know a thing or two about statistics, and my speculation is in the direction that the Transgenders are killed at a lesser rate than, let's call it normal people, for the same reason that there are more senior deaths from cancer than there are, you know, young people deaths. I think that, I think most trans people just kill themselves before they get a chance to become murder victims. So it could be one of those things. Because they do have the 43-47% suicide attempt rate, something insane right. like that, and it's like shooting a dead guy when you're if one were to be shooting a trans person. So I don't think
I'd like to see a trans failed suicide attempt tranny pretend they're dead, like you pretend you're a woman, pretend you actually succeeded. I want somebody to pioneer that whole art,
right.
Just extend the delusion.
That's why he's back when we were keeping that score. That's why he's one of the most read authors on Countercurrents. But we have the other most read author on Countercurrents here with us, Mr. Richard Houck, also known as Haywild Rich. And Rich, I'm going to pose to you the same questions as I did to Jim. What do you think is the most important thing you did this year? What is the... what is the lesson you have learned? What lessons you think our movement should have learned or did learn? What do you think is the landmark event of the year?
Oh, hey, thanks for having me on. So the things I think I did that were interesting or important. Well, I did a lot of legal aid in the community this year. Whole bunch of interesting things were going on. There were some lawsuits. There was a lot of things coming with COVID and vaccinations that people were very concerned about. There's been a huge, well, it seems to me, at least, I believe it is generally, there's been an uptick in people being investigated and harassed for things they post on the internet and for podcasting. People have been having like local detectives that are part of the Joint Terror Task Force, you know, come bother them at work because they said something unflattering about other races on the internet. I think that's been kind of been keeping me busy and been an interesting thing to do, just in sort of the legal aspect of helping people who are, you know, some don't even consider themselves dissidents. Some are just like normal people who are like complaining about the crime and then ended up on someone's radar somehow. I think writing wise, honestly, I'm really proud of that Pizza Hut article. it was sort of just a dear diary. I was just sort of reminiscing about my life, and it started off just sort of as a blog post, and then Greg published it, and it ended up being really one of the more popular things I've written in a little while. So that was kind of a highlight. And just doing the general social capital things and the little bits of decay in the real world. You know, a lot of times we talk about these kind of big concepts of, you know, just like you guys were like, hey, should we give California back to the Mexicans or give Texas back to the Mexicans? And these big topics of who we are as a people and what does it mean to be white. And then I kind of, you know, I've of course was interested in that at some point, but now I'm really more interested in like the little day to day things of how does what happened in Congress in the 60s affecting my life in the middle of Ohio now on a, you know, Tuesday afternoon, or how does, you know, what happened in Europe in the 20th century, how does that relate to, you know, what I'm dealing with now in the middle of flyover country? And that's sort of the stuff I've been, you know, more and more interested in, the little nitty gritty. As far as lessons, I think I've become more and more anti-populist and more elitist over the last year. And what I mean by that is, like, I don't have much faith in the masses to do much of anything or some sort of mass awakening or mass participation. And I am subscribing more and more than ever to, like, the great man theory of this idea that history is sort of moved around by a handful of elites and great men, and they shape the world and their image, and then everybody else sort of just, you know, lives in their reality. So I think that's changed my approach a bit, and maybe I'll change my view, I guess, of my own life a bit, and the necessity of becoming sort of a new elite on our own, and not so much concerned about, like, a mass awakening or red pilling the masses or that sort of thing, but more so as positioning ourselves to be able to change things and kind of rebuild society in our image. So yeah, it's kind of my I guess my big takeaway of what I was working on, and sort of you know, what's changed a little bit for me in 2021.
That's very interesting. Rich, and you are, of course, part of the action crew because of all the legal work you have been doing, of all the legal aid you've been providing to our movement. It's an overlooked part because by necessity, by its very nature, it's done very far away from the spotlight. And the movement online is people need to understand this, that what we as content creators do is basically entertainment. Yeah, we do informing. Yes, we do education. But we are, I don't want to say first and foremost entertainers, but I am sitting here dressed like Santa Claus. I am here making the lamest jokes of my entire life. I mean, and, you know, the audience loves it. I'm here covering my very poor English with excuses like, oh, it's a pun, it's a joke, it's a mangled idiom. But we are entertainers. However, much of what the real work entails is it's done in dusty offices. It's done, you know, you're reading at 3 a.m., you're writing. It's, and I'm amazed at the work that you do, Rich, and I hope you can keep at it. I'm going to have to agree with you about, on one hand, focusing on constructing a coalition which can actually do something, coalition of men, less than maybe a coalition of political movements. And on the other side, focusing on the day-to-day stuff. I have a special sort of dislike for the middle of anything. It's focus on the big stuff and the small stuff. The medium-sized stuff, in my experience, tends to sort itself out all by itself. So with that, let's move on to Thomas Steuben. Now, Thomas, you are also a man of action. I mean, if you choose to, you can reveal the kind of actions you've been taking throughout this year and even before. But for now, let's keep to what do you think is the most important thing you did, the defining landmark event of 2021, and what do you think the lessons are which the movement should have learned and you personally learned or should have learned? So let's go with that.
Thanks. So I'm quite honored to be here. Happy New Year's. So for my great achievement this year, I probably say it's the article I wrote about Trump and the Wounded Grail King, because for me, that was very special because I could finally take all this, like, abstract metaphysics from Julius Evola and apply it to something that's actually very concrete and useful. It kind of have these two things intersect when usually they don't. It's usually just like all the Evolian stuff is usually musty tomes, and it's for people who are into that stuff. And here I actually see, hey, this could be applied in a practical manner in real life. This is a myth happening. Same kind of my famous article, where it's very strange how myth and stuff that is usually abstract or ancient or archaic has these practical implications. That's very interesting. And also, if we act upon it, useful. Other accomplishments, I can't talk about them all, but I will say, you know, there was a lot of political activity in SoCal. We're not a lost cause. I do try to go to rallies occasionally. There's some other projects I definitely can't talk about, but a personal kind of action project I did that wasn't fully political, it's more like metapolitical, was that I finished a miniature triathlon. I'm not sure if I'm going to do another one this coming year. It's pretty tough, but it was fun. So maybe yes, maybe no. And probably the landmark thing that happened this year, there's been a lot. I would say the blowback against the whole new variant thing with COVID, where even here in California, where it's a very hysterical government, most I did was a single month of mask mandates. So the fact that's all that this you know, psychopathic governor can muster, that's good. And there's a lot of passive aggressive resistance against that. People are not wearing masks. People are tired. Same with Biden, where he said there's no federal solution. So we're making progress. We haven't won yet. We have to like do the victory lap here. That's good. We finally have people riled up and resistance is actually working. Even though it's a very, you know, we haven't stopped the great replacement. This is, you know, masks are a paltry matter compared to, you know, white genocide, but it's, we're making progress, which is good. And I would tie that into like two great lessons that I kind of took away, is that we need to do what Saul Alinsky did. Get people riled up, have them have fun, let them do tactics that are fun, but make sure they stay on target and always have a new fight afterwards. So after we win on all the stuff, like we get rid of the QR codes, masks, all the dumb hypochondria, abusing kids in schools, all that, we can't let these people either go home to watch football again. We also cannot let them be hijacked to like the Tea Party was back in the day into like becoming silly or effeminate. They have to be redirected towards our issues. And I think that's going to be very easy because there is a lot of racial issues in here. You know, it's like, obviously, Pfizer is not run by people named Pfizer. They're named Sackler, who are poisoned our people. There are some other issues where it's kind of applied against whites only, even though a lot of Black people are unvaccinated. It seems like we're the ones who are singled out. So that's good. I think also it'll be easier to keep, to prevent a hijacking. There is an attempted hijacking underway with all the weird conspiracy theories, but it seems like normal people are going to be harder to hijack this time, at least, I hope. And two, also for the midterms, what I've realized is that the Democrats are not our threat. They're imploding rapidly. They're an embarrassment to themselves. Our greatest issue will be rhinos. And I think it is of the utmost importance that we have people running for office across, not just for Congress or these big, glorious offices, but even city council, school board. And go and destroy every single rhino. They're easy targets. They're weak. They have more money, more backing, but that's it. They have no personality. They have no truth. They have no charisma. They should be destroyed. Because the Democrats will destroy themselves. The rhinos will simply kind of continue this, but it'll be a little less stupid, but it won't get any better. But overall, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, but, you know, Spengler says, you know, hey, optimism is cowardice, but you know what? We can still have a very brave pessimism. I would still like, you know, being brown, you know, beaten down by all the bad stuff. I'm just happy with how it has finally galvanized our people. And we kind of, and it's true. It's like, I don't want to be like the guy who says, I told you so. But they always say like, hey, you may not care about politics, but politics cares about you. I think finally that it took horrible stuff, but people finally have realized that, yes, there's no escaping politics. You can't go to your gated community or avoid it. It's in your face all the time now. Perhaps literally in your face with a weird mask mandate. So that is a good thing. I think we can continue to grow, continue to struggle. I'm just very happy. And literature-wise, I'm almost done with Decline of the West. I also want to read the rest of Oswald Spengler's work, like Man and Technics and Our Decision. I finally had time to actually read this year. I've been pretty busy before that. So this is great to get caught up on the stuff I wanted to read. So that might come out in some writings I do for Countercurrents this coming year, but it looks great.
Well, if you're taking recommendations, I would strongly recommend Preußentum und Sozialismus, or Prussiandom and Socialism, which is a collection of essays which really lays out Spengler's visions for society. And of course, you're right. And people who watch the millennial streams will remember Mark Malone mentioned that the whole globalist agenda is going to be implemented at the state and local level. And this is where it can be intercepted slowed down, deconstructed, and possibly even, with God's help, knock on wood, defeated. And definitely try to get involved in local politics, state politics, you know, county commissioner, dog catcher. Even as dog catcher, you can change a lot of things. And let's not lose sight of the target. Like I said, my take on this is that while the whole Great Reset medical tyranny issue is more urgent, the demographic replacement and dispossession of white people is more pressing. And it's a speed versus weight question. But we have here a final member of the action crew. Last but definitely not least, the writer's block would not be possible without him. I would actually have to police the chat myself, and I'm just such a nice guy, I couldn't do it. Gadius Maximus, king of the Jannies, absolute dominator of the chat. Welcome to the show, sir. What do you think has been the highlight of the year 2021 for you? What do you think are the lessons we have learned? What are you most proud of? You know the questions. Take it away.
All right, so achievements-wise, I mean like personal achievements or whatever, but I've been recording. I've been submitting audio recordings of articles like done in my spare time to Countercurrents for about a couple years now, you know. Actually, I'm hoping to finish one up. I got in the works. I'm going to try to finish it up by the end of this week. It's a collection of like just articles from 2021 or whatever, like one of those block of articles. But I mean, this last year I did Rich Houck's Anarcho-Tyranny series and Spencer Quinn's Solzhenitsyn 200 Years Together series for Countercurrents. And I also did a project on my own on Telegram, The Ethno-State by Wilmot Robertson. I read the entire book, and that's like a hobby I've picked up for the past couple years. And I'm going to make a New Year's resolution. I'm going to try to try to do at least one article a week this year, even if I don't like submit it, just try to like, you know, keep them in the can or whatever, keep one in the chute, and just try to build on that skill, like that hobby of like narrating or whatever. So other than that, I mean, like you said, I'm, you know, I've been modding the chat, being a Janny or whatever. And, I like doing that. That's fun, you know. Also, you know, I'm just like a professional respecter now, you know. I don't want to call myself a fan anymore because Jim Goad shamed me into not using the word fan. But I just call myself a professional respecter. So I basically just support, you know, the people that are out there doing, you know, the stuff that I think needs to be done. Like Rich, he's doing his legal thing, and I support him. You know, I support Countercurrents and all that stuff. And that's basically what I've been doing, my achievements wise. As for lessons learned, like I talked about Rich, right? He's you know, I support his legal work and everything. But if we've learned any lesson from this past year, as far as lessons learned, it's we need some type of lawfare type deal for our side, because they're not going to quit. Like, look at Charlottesville, right? Charlottesville was like a test case for how they were dipping their toes in to see like what they could get away with. Like, can we really like pull off this lawsuit against all these indigent guys from middle America with, you know, multi-million dollar lawyers and just basically dunk on them in Charlottesville? What can we get away with? Now, I don't think they really got away with much. As far as I'm concerned, it's pretty much a victory as far as I'm concerned. They didn't really get that much, but they haven't learned their lesson. They're not going to learn their lesson. They're already trying to sue the January 6th people, right? The ADL joined something. They're going to sue like the people, you know, the Boomerwaffen division that laid siege to the Capitol. So we need like some type of organizational infrastructure to fight back against this type of stuff, because Con Inc. isn't going to help, right? Like, the Alliance Defending Freedom or the Federalist Society, these guys don't ever like actually defend anybody who's, you know, outside the, you know, what's acceptable or whatever. The ACL used to, but that all stopped with Charlottesville. After Charlottesville, the ACL the ACLU basically cucked, and they're not going to help any of our guys out anymore. So we need something on our own, and that's why, you know, like that's what Rich has been up to. He's been up to just, like, you know, out there fighting the good fight, doing stuff behind the scenes, and, you know, trying to get the ball rolling on this thing. So that's one of the lessons. The other lesson I've learned is the platforming, you know, doesn't really work. It hasn't really, it's worked a little bit for, you know, some guys. Like, some people get kicked off one of, you know, these big sites or whatever, and they get all butt hurt and they fade into oblivion, but it only works if you let it, right? I heard Krogan, American Krogan on Millennial, I think it was on Millennial. He talked about, man, sometimes I don't know if I should keep doing these videos because I'm kicked off YouTube and I'm only on Odyssey or whatever. And I don't really want him to, like, feel that way, because it's important for him to keep doing what he's doing, right? I mean, he's documenting, like, the video game niche, but from this angle or whatever. And as far as Odyssey's concerned, I just got done. I also Jannied for Woes for Millennial too. He kind of scalped me, but he was doing great. That was the best Millennial of all time, as far as I'm concerned. And I think that's, like, the general consensus. He had it was the best Millennial, and it was totally off YouTube. It was exclusively on Odyssey. So deplatforming, it only works a little bit for, you know, if you let it. If you just keep at it, if you keep going, you keep, you know, just keep up the fight, you'll be fine. And as far as Odyssey's concerned, like, the future's looking bright for that platform, you know, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, those are probably the lessons I've learned. And, you know, Stone Toss hit his he hit it big with his NFTs too. So that's, you know, that's another white pill for our side. You know, it's not over if we get, you know, canned off these platforms or whatever. So that's those are my lessons learned for the year.
This is actually very important to take into consideration, because, I mean, when we started the Writer's Block with Full Moon Ancestry way back in the olden days in, was it March or April of 2020, we didn't even bother with YouTube, you know, said, let's do it on this dinky Chinese website called DLive. And even as DLive, as that piece of coast is slowly wasting away, like that piece of runway is slowly disappearing, we are actually transitioning to Odyssey. We are actually, I think people, you commented on this, Gadius, that more people were watching, most of anything on Odyssey than they were on DLive, and Woes had gigantic numbers on DLive. I think it was Guide to Culture. He was streaming. Frody was streaming to Odyssey and DLive simultaneously, and the numbers on Odyssey were huge. Whereas before, you would have, you know, like 500 guys on DLive and 20 on Odyssey. And I see. I mean, our numbers here. We have actually exactly 100 more people on DLive. So this place is going away. I mean, I like DLive. Let's not kid ourselves here, but we are probably going to get kicked off of this platform pretty soon. And I mean this like in real time, not tomorrow, but maybe in a year, maybe two. So let's not get too comfortable here. Let's actually make the move to Odyssey. And if everything fails, we have countercurrents.com. We have these websites which the movement actually owns, and we've actually proven to be quite resilient even to financial deplatforming. So yeah, they've banned us from the whole credit card thing, and we're still going. So the name of the game has switched to construction of infrastructure. We're no longer really just banking away numbers on social media, but we are building stuff, and that's something very positive and something for the panel to chew on if it is so inclined.
Well, Frody had EMJ versus Uncle Jared, right? And he had thousands of views for that debate. And it wasn't even on Odyssey. I think it was close to 9,000 views between Odyssey and DLive put together. And I think like millennial, because when you were talking about what I said on Telegram, I think millennial like had some sort of impact on Odyssey versus DLive. Like they switched, people switched to Odyssey as like their preferred platform. Cause I mean, it was just woes going hard for like, you know, 3 weeks straight and everybody's watching Odyssey over the holiday. So now everyone's just clicking onto Odyssey. So it's not that bad. Like, you know, but like I said, the deplatforming thing, like, you know, it only works if you let it.
It's personally, I mean, I found that in the beginning, the millennials were cutting off and I had to refresh the page all the time. But then because I've been around the internet, you know, I'm a young guy, but I was basically glued to my computer since age 3, maybe. I was around when YouTube was in 2006, 2007, it was this clunky website. You didn't have reliable, you couldn't even just watch videos reliably. You had to reset the website all the time. And then my father would yell at me because I was eating up all the bandwidth by listening to music on YouTube back in the olden days. I mean, the Zoomers will not know about this, but the bandwidth was finite at one distant point in the past. And I'm thinking, compared to early YouTube, Odyssey is awesome, but you know, they're going to have to iron out some kinks before they are, you know, a YouTube grade website. But you know, for the time being, it's a good place to, I wouldn't say sprout roots, but maybe set down our feet for a while. And this is all very important, but of course that's from the entertainment aspect of it. As someone who actually has had the law breathing down my neck recently, I would greatly appreciate the existence of dissident attorneys and a place where someone who is of the dissident right could just pick up a phone and say, "Hi, I'm a racist YouTuber and I need legal representation." Maybe there should be like a professional legal association, and I know I have two of the finest legal minds of the dissident right here on this panel with me, if they would like to chime in.
Yeah, that's unironically been exactly how a lot of calls I've taken have gone. Like people have mentioned in their group chat or to a friend that they had some legal problems, and they're like, "Hey, I know a guy that is like, you know, he's not going to hang up the phone on you if you said you were spamming the N word at the FBI, and all of a sudden they're visiting you." And I've had people, and they were literally like, "Yeah, so here's the thing. I did a racism on the internet, and now like people are showing up at my work. What do I do?" And it's very helpful when, you know, their reaction, they're always so relieved. And I even had people, it's kind of an interesting case. There was a person, a client of mine, and they went to, this is when all the BLM riots were going on. They were saying, you know, doing racism on the internet, and some detectives came and visited them and kind of just trying to intimidate them. And they always had the same thing, like, "Oh, we're just here to make sure, you know, you're not the next Dylan Roof for the next whatever, you know, we're just making sure everything's okay. You don't need any help." And really they're just trying to intimidate people so they don't say inconvenient things for the regime on the internet. So anyway, this person goes to like this legal aid clinic thing, and they're saying, "Hey, I was saying some kind of edgy things on the internet, and now like I had these detectives bother me." And the person at the clinic was like, "Oh yeah, we can totally help. It's terrible what's going on, you know, when you speak out for racial justice." And anyway, what happened is this person, this legal clinic worker, thought that the person who I ended up helping was being investigated by the police for being pro Black Lives Matter. Well, it was kind of as far opposite as it could possibly be. And once the person at the legal clinic realized that this was not like some anti-racist bleeding heart type, that they were saying things quite the opposite, they immediately said, "Oh, sorry, we can't help you here. We don't do that kind of work." And, you know, 30 seconds before, they were Oh, yeah, it's just terrible how they're infringing on your speech and your civil rights. We'll make, you know, we could even sue them if you want, you know, telling them all this stuff. And then as soon as they realized that they were a racist, they were like, oh, sorry, we can't help you. So, yeah, we just need a place or people that when these people run into some things that are politically incorrect or normal lawyers are maybe afraid to deal with. Or they just sometimes they just disagree. They just won't help you because they plainly disagree with what you're saying. Or, you know, I've had people who contacted lawyers about they wanted a religious exemption for a vaccine mandate. They didn't want the vaccine, right? And there's lawyers who were like, yeah, you know, I do this kind of, this is the kind of work I do, but, you know, why don't you just take the vaccine? It's safe. And, you know, whether or not it's safe or not, I don't really care if people want a exemption or they don't want to be forced to take it. You know, I help people out with that. And there's just not a good place for that right now. And that's kind of what I'm trying to hopefully kind of fill that gap. And, it's a weird thing because a lot of people still have it just fine. They're not really being bothered too much in the day-to-day life for white people in a lot of ways has declined so slowly they don't even realize it sucks. And, you know, it's not something you see. And like we talked about the entertainment, a lot of people just like to be entertained and they don't really see the value in like a legal aid because they're like, well, I don't need a lawyer right now. It's fine. And but, you know, we'll see. I think it'll change over time. I hope anyway.
People do need we as a movement need to have a legal backbone. Mr. Goad will tell you, you know, it's prison's not a death sentence, but it's not exactly a pleasant experience, even though there is a good deal of racial harmony in prison, from what I can tell, Mr. Goad.
I've never seen the races get along better than in prison, surprisingly, because there are boundaries and there's mutually assured destruction. Like you touch one, you touch them all. I always tell the story the night I got out, I was in 2.5 years. I was at Fred Meyer, which was like a Kmart of the Northwest, standing in line for the cash register. Someone bumped into me and walked away. And I was startled, shocked, because you don't do that in prison. Everyone's respectful. But as far as lawfare, I mean, I'm one of the only good things about living in Atlanta is I know Sam Dixon, the Klan lawyer. We have lunch every couple months and he's great. But yeah, definitely need more lawyers because that's where it's going to be fought. But not a lawyer. I just counteract the narrative. I think that's my job.
Right. Well, it's important to, I mean, if Sam Dixon is a great guy, but he's getting on in age, and it's also very important to replace personnel as they retire or maybe are burned out. And here with us on this show, as part of the Action Crew, were the two greatest legal minds of the dissident right. And of course, you know, I used to be a lawyer as well, but I'm in Macedonia and I'm no longer practicing, so I don't really count. I'm just an entertainer. I'm just a guy in a silly hat and an even sillier mustache. Well, with that, I want to thank Jim, Gadius, Richard, and Thomas Steuben. Tom, sorry, I got to learn to be more formal with and more less formal with my guests. I want to thank you for being part of the best year ever Writer's Block extravaganza and for enriching my holiday experience. Thank you, kind sirs. Thank you very much. And what can I say? Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Namaste.
Happy New Year.
We're going to win.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And with that, I would like to bring in as we send out the Action Crew, I want to bring in the Boozy Crew, which consists of the Z-Man of the Z-Blog, Mr. Carl Thorburn, and the guest of honor for this Writer's Block extravaganza, Mr. Full Moon Ancestry!
Whee! Hey guys,
how are you doing, everyone?
How's I'm good. Full Moon. Last time I was on here, I think I think you were having internet difficulty or something, and you had to abandon ship.
I'm not a good swimmer, so that ship has sailed, but I am back. Great to see everyone. Z-Man, great to see you. Carl, great as always. And the one, the only, not Santa Claus, but Nicholas Julby, the future ruler of Macedonia. So great to see you, and thank you so much. That's right. Once I thought I was out, Nick pulls me back in. Great to see everyone. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Put you on top because, you know, you're a better man than me in many respects. You deserve to be on top. Oh, that sounded weird.
That was the COVID sniffle.
Yeah. Yeah, COVID spreads to my brain. And, of course, we have with us the Z-Man of the Z-Blog and Mr. Carl Thorburn. Now, I've been coming up with all sorts of silly nicknames for all my guests, but, I mean, why don't you just come up with nicknames for yourself while I pour myself another cup of tea?
Sretna Nova Gonina. Is that how you say it? Happy New Year, Macedonian. Sretna Nova Gonina.
Sretna. It's a softer K. It's a K, but soft. Right. But
well, I looked it up on the internet. So, and Google told me it was. It gave me a couple versions, which didn't exactly instill a lot of confidence in their translation, since I would think Happy New Year is probably one of those terms that exist in every language ever spoken by human beings, or human beings have had a calendar anyway. So, but yeah, I don't know. I don't think I need a nickname since, you know, it's kind of Ed Dutton. I was on with him last week before, I don't know. And he kind of laughed that my name is actually my nickname. So it just kind of works out.
It's just, yeah, it's already abbreviated. I guess in my case, you could go with Carlton, because I've got a T-O-N in the surname. So,
isn't Carlton the guy from The Fresh Prince?
Yeah, right. That's what I was thinking.
Right. It's like this thing where when you're from the outside of America looking in, you're looking at the pop culture and you're thinking of Carlton not as some guy you grew up with. Wait, isn't that like Will Smith's cousin in The Fresh Prince? I never really could watch that one. It was just so annoying. It was a very fake and put on show. Like,
yeah. Well, Carlton was interesting because he was kind of like the opposite of a Wigger. You know, he's like a black man who was basically behaving white.
Well, that's good to know. It's I think the uncle was like that too, the one who was elected judge.
Right, yeah.
A little bit, maybe. Well, anyways, that's the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. But it's a fresh new year here. It's the fresh new year of Bel-Air. And we've been just through the best year ever, which was 2021. And as I have been asking all of my guests, what do you think is the most important thing that has happened to you personally all year? What do you think that is the most important thing overall to have happened this year? And what do you think are the lessons we have learned, we should have learned? What do you think is the most important thing you personally have done for the movement this year? Well, let's start with Z-Man, because a little birdie tells him that he might actually be more constrained with time than the rest of us scroungers.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I didn't really. I mean, I started doing more stuff behind the paywall, and you know, I actually tried to create a paywall, you know, build content behind it and all that. And you know, I've learned a good lesson from it, is that our people are weird. You know, the left will donate to things because they believe in it. Our side will donate to things because they get something for it. It's a strange sort of transactional relationship almost with politics. And it's not a bad thing necessarily. You know, we don't want to live in a world in which people are hyper-politicized. That's the problem that we have. If we live in a hyper-politicized world. So, you know, the answer to that is not to, you know, be hyper-political, but we have to figure out how to navigate around it and just accept the fact that's how it is. And what I found is that, you know, if you give people something extra, a little sweetener, they'll say, yeah, I'll kick in a couple bucks a month. So, you know, that's a good lesson learned. And I think, you know, I talked about this? I don't remember now. Anyway, I think it was today. Yeah, I was actually, yeah, I was actually behind the paywall of my podcast. Is that I saw yesterday Countercurrents raised a whole bunch of money in 2021. You know, I know VDare made a lot of money. And there's a definite change happening, and that's a good thing. You know, in 2021, a lot of people who write checks to conservative ink started to rethink things. This is good. That's always a helpful thing. And people are taking a new view in politics. So, and it also means we're all getting better at this. You know, we're getting better at understanding how to do this, be professional at politics. And that's really, I think, probably the best thing that happened last year is a lot of the idiots went away. And that's a good thing. And we've also, I think there's been a change in tone. We're not ashamed to
I'm
say,
still hey, here, Z-Man. All the idiots haven't gone away. I'm still here.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to name names, you know, about certain people, but, you know, there's certain people who were big prominent names in the alt-right are now, you know, they hardly get mentioned. And when they do, it's just a joke. You know, people just make fun of it and say, you know, don't be that guy. And that's a good thing. I mean, we're starting to set some standards and say, you know, this is acceptable. This is not. So there's a lot of good things. I mean, my contribution to it, I don't know. I never really think about it too much. I just do my thing.
Yeah, that is all fascinating. And of course, you should all get behind the Z-Man's Green Door. It's I pay him $5 a month. And for, I think it's five. It actually may be three. I don't know. I'm a cheap person, so it's probably three. I try not to think about money. It's a very middle class thing to do. But yes, I am behind the Z-Man's Green Door, and I read all of the wonderful movie reviews he does. And I also listen to his Sunday Thoughts show, which is actually a more relaxed format than the Power Hour. The Z-Man Power Hour is, of course, it's something I listen to when I'm walking by the riverside or I'm trying to go to sleep, because the Z-Man has a wonderful speaking voice, I've got to say that. But the Sunday Thoughts, it's like he's addressing a friend at a bar and he's just airing out his grievances, which is what I'm used to with the elders, really. They have a lot of grievances to air. So for that, I am very appreciative of the Z-Man. And cheers to you, sir. Cheers to you. But moving on, Mr. Thorburn, you have achieved quite a lot this year. I mean, and of course, you and the Z-Man achieved something together with me when I was hosting the Provisional Writer's Block way back when Full Moon was, I believe you were exploring the frozen wilderness of the North American continent, and I was left as caretaker of the Writer's Block. We had the crypto debate, and Gadius Maximus, oh darn, I should have kept him on for this segment. He called it one of the landmark events of the year as he saw it, which was, I was actually pretty proud to have made that possible. And okay, so all the questions I asked C, what do you think you did personally, which was you know, outstanding? What do you think the lessons learned as a movement, you as a person, what is you think is the landmark event of the year too? So take it away, Carl.
I actually love what Z-Man said earlier about sort of the movement kind of maturing a little bit or becoming a little bit more aware of certain characters that end up, you know, causing more trouble than they're worth, really. Yeah, not going to name names either, but I think we're heading in that direction, and that's really exciting. It's like we're moving toward a more professional political machine almost. And there was a really good quote from Warren Baillot, I think is how you say his name. He posted on Telegram earlier. He said, "The struggle to gain political power is how a movement earns political power. In other words, the struggle itself shapes your political movement into something worthy of taking and holding power. The idea that some billionaire could just cut a check and astroturf the revolution into being goes against the whole idea of uphill populist struggle, which is the prerequisite to building up a movement capable of truly revolutionary change." And that really sums it up. Like, it also kind of encapsulates the idea that everybody participating in this is, you know, no matter how small your role is or what you're doing, you are having an effect that's felt at the overall level. And, you know, I think that's the issue that I've noticed years, you know, for years now, is that everybody wants to be the leader. You know, everybody wants to be able to say, like, oh, you should be doing this and you should be doing that. And you're wasting your time by doing this. Really, honestly, that's not how anything works at the level that we're currently at. You know, where we're at right now, it's we're still sort of in the emergent phase, right? And, you know, we will eventually have leadership, but, and you know, when we get there, it'll be good leadership, I'm sure. But we shouldn't be attacking each other and criticizing each other for not doing the right thing at the right moment. And I think that's really the sign of a growing and good movement, is that it's recognizes the value of emergence and maturity also. But anyway, yeah, personally for me, I mean, I have a Telegram channel. I've got 1500 followers now. That's pretty good. I feel like I should be writing more for Countercurrents. I don't write as much as I should. That's something I want to do more in the new year, is put out more articles. And I mean, in my personal private life, I've had a couple wins this year. I won't go into them, but it's been good. I think when I step away, I think 2021, we kind of jokingly say it's the best year, but it was not the best year for most people. And I think 2022 is going to be, I anticipate it'll probably be a better year. If I had to guess, but you know, fingers crossed, we'll see.
That's another way to look at it, is that we have, as distance, gotten in on the ground floor. And maybe, you know, tomorrow we're going to have good leadership. Maybe we will be the good leadership, having earned our scars, our taken our lumps, and become the leaders we ought to become. And maybe the alt-right was a mixed blessing. You know, maybe it was a blessing in disguise, like they say in Silicon Valley, fail early, fail often.
Yeah, it was a phase.
Early.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, the whole thing. I mean, you know, a lot of people say it emerged in like 2016 with Trump, but you know, I mean, there was stuff there for years before that, and so, you know, it's like evolution. You know, we're going through all these different phases, and you know, on the way out, we're going to grow new limbs and discard others along the way, you know. So it'll be, I mean, it's exciting, you know. We get to see, we get front row seats of what happens. Honestly, it's just better than anything you would see on Netflix, you know.
Yeah, I was asked recently by someone on Twitter, you know, why do you do this political stuff? And I said to them, you got anything better to do? Because this is the best thing you could be doing, the most interesting thing you could be doing. I wouldn't really be doing anything else. Not that I can at this point. You know. But speaking of leaders, I got something very special for us here tonight. We have the future very enlightened despot of New Karelia with us, Mr. Full Moon Ancestry, captain of the Writer's Block, founder, our great and illustrious, glorious founder of this show, him and I, for any newcomers which may have come in, you know, after the rebranding, after the everything we did, Full Moon Ancestry and I started the Writer's Block. Well, it was really his show. I just poked my head in on Saturdays. All the way back, was it March 2020? It was March 2020, and it seems like a lifetime ago. We were in his hotel room here in Skopje, Macedonia, goofing off on the couch, drinking an entire bottle of limoncello, which in retrospect was not the best of decisions. My my head certainly did not appreciate that. But Full Moon, please reintroduce yourself and take it away, brother. Everything that happened to you this year, I want to hear all about it. All of the lessons you may or may not have learned, let's share it with the panel, share it with the crowd.
I am the tyrant of New Karelia, and I wouldn't be the tyrant dictator if I didn't go through all of the challenges and heartaches and hassles of 2021. 2021 really was one of the most life-changing years of my life. I tried to buy land. I failed at that. I tried to buy a used car. I failed at that. I even tried to adopt a dog, and it was the wrong dog. And I went through a lot of challenges. But when we take a reminder of what the Stoics have taught us throughout history, they've taught us three main things: that we can't always change what happens on the outside, but we can control our emotions and feelings and thoughts on the inside. And when we do survive or go through challenges, not only do we survive or accomplish things, we go through a journey. We go through a process, a hero's journey, if you will. And the third thing is that whatever happens, good, bad, I know it's going to sound harsh, but it is my responsibility or our responsibility to make sure that we take advantage of whatever happens, good, bad, positive, negative, and to try to come out on top. And throughout all the challenges, all the mistakes, all the failures, kind of like an episode of The Simpsons, I am doing great, very happy, very thankful for all the stuff I have in life. And believe it or not, I'm not dead yet. And I am just very happy. And nothing feels better than, as a man, being yourself, going on your purpose, and having your community or tribe. And while I wish I was in Finland or in Macedonia, I do have a nice tribe or community. There might be two dogs, but I am the leader of that pack. And New Karelia is growing.
Well, as I said in the beginning of this show to Mr. James O'Mara, woof, woof. And oh, people will get that joke. Well, stay tuned to the writer's block, people. You might actually gather the necessary info to catch that reference. At some point in the future, I may be bringing in an expert from the British Isles to untangle that mystery. But it is one of those things, and of course, I know a little bit more about your adventures in homesteading New Karelia than others. At some point, they might even be made into a grand tale of conquest and of nature and hardship and deception. Oh, it's actually very, very intriguing. But of course, you also had a very eventful 2020. And as we know, hindsight is 2020. So there might be some things going on in the future there. That's about all I am legally entitled to reveal. But for all four of us, and for all three of you, but all four of us, it seems that this was a year of growth. And this is the theme I keep coming back to. This entire show, everyone I spoke with seems convinced that this was a year where we took it on the chin in the beginning with the elections and the January 6th thing, and then the power of the system began coming down on the dissident right like a ton of bricks. But we have so far, knock on wood, cross myself, withstood the onslaught, and we might actually come out of this much stronger, come out of the other end of this tunnel stronger. So if the panel would like to chew on that, Z, I think those are pots and pans in the background. You might be serving up some hot takes for us, would you, sir? Take it away, if you will.
That's my chair creaking. I should probably buy a new chair, but I can't afford it. So you get behind the grid. Oh, okay.
yes, buy Mr. Z a new chair.
Yeah. Now, chairs are a shit coin. You don't want any chairs.
Well, it's funny. I see these various YouTubers who have these. I didn't realize this. They look like race car seats, and someone told me that these things cost like $10,000 or gamer chairs. And I'm like, my goodness. I mean,
no, never get a gaming chair. I'm actually sitting on one right now, and it's not comfortable. I had to buy a cheap pillow or something to put on it because the bottom of it's like as hard as a rock. But if you want a decent chair, get an office chair.
Yeah, I went down to the office. That's what I have. I have a home office in my home. But anyway, it's funny about this whole thing about standards and what happened. I, about I don't know, 5 years ago or so. I don't know. Probably one of the first handful of shows I was ever invited onto. And it was actually Ramsey Paul. It was a holiday deal, kind of like this, where different people on. And I was on with Jared Taylor, and I had just met Jared like the year before or something. And some other guy, I don't remember his name, and someone else. But anyway, they asked about, the question was, you know, what do you think is going on with the censorship? What should we do? And my answer at the time, and everyone thought I was insane, was that we should welcome it, because censorship makes you stronger. You know, if you go on YouTube and watch comedy shows from the 1960s, 1970s, a lot of British stuff is on, American stuff is on, or watch old movies, you know, going back even further when it had real strong censorship, the humor was actually much better, because it was, the people had to be smarter about it. They had to be much more clever about it. You know, the witty banter between the male and female in a movie, the adults in the audience, they got it. They understood it and they laughed. And their kids were like, well, I don't understand what's happening. And that's because it was necessary. And what you had is a much better, you know, funnier people and more talented people were able to flourish. But then all of a sudden they said, okay, you can use F-bombs and talk about the most vulgar content you want in public. And every degenerate shows up on stage just rattling off F-bombs and vulgar content. And so, you didn't actually improve the quality of the product. You just diluted it with lots of poor people, you know, lots of low-quality people. And that's always been the problem in outsider politics. I've called it the weirdo problem for a long time now, because it just attracts weirdos. We say, oh, geez, you know, welcome everyone. We are happy you're here. And then, you know, it turns out that, well, maybe we're not really that happy you're here. But then you get all this, don't punch right, don't do this, don't do that. And it just becomes a problem. But the crackdowns have kind of forced the issue on us. It's kind of forced us to abide by a certain set of standards. So these guys who they can't go online without using epithets, well, they just get blown off. They get nuked off the internet. Well, good. Now they're gone. And even like on a place like Gab, where you know they're allowed to do this stuff, they're now bullied into not doing it. They're shamed into not doing it. When they start this stuff, people say, look, idiot, you know, this, you know, you're going to ruin this for the rest of us. Please stop doing it. And they wound up being muted, and that's the end of them. And it's a good thing. I mean, this is the other side is made the hill steeper. So we've had to struggle and we've gotten better. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's just how you get better. You know, adversity builds strength. And so, I mean, I didn't think I was a genius 5 years ago, although everyone thought I was insane. But I think I've been proven correct that you know, we're better off. And, you know, look, there's a limit to this. If they come to my door and drag me out and throw me in a dungeon, that's not adversity I'm looking forward to.
But you can call Rich Hauk. See, but that's the beauty of it. As the whole people knocking on your door and dragging you off to the dungeon thing intensifies, we're going to have to step up our legal game. And what do you know? We might actually get a good legal game there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something I don't know. I mean, I sound like a broken record, but you know what? You have to keep saying this stuff over and over again. To be blunt about it, you know, I think most of a lot of the 1.0 guys always kept insisting that, oh, no, we have to keep doing these things that fail over and over again, because if we don't, that's bad. Well, I think the last couple of years, it's finally been drilled into people's heads that no, that 1.0 stuff doesn't work. No more marching around in weird hats and flags and costumes and all the other stuff. And you know, we're not going to play make-believe and pretend that this is 1925 and we're all in Berlin. That's just not reality. And I think a lot of people are starting to wake up to this and get with the program. And one of the things will be good is that when we start to litigate this stuff, look, some jerk off starts harassing you at your business, your work, and you can then say, well, all right, I'm going to go into court and I'm going to file a civil suit against them. Civil suits in America have a fairly low threshold. Yeah, getting into court is not that hard. And it's a huge pain in the ass for the other person. And what we need to be is just like our friends, in the lawfare markets in the old days, they did the same thing. You know, they just nibbled away, gnawed away at it. And all you have to do is get one Twitter account that where Twitter said, yep, we're going to go ahead and accede to the court order and give you their information and all their now deleted tweets. And that person's going to have to go through interrogatories and give a deposition. word will get out. They'll all stop. Because what'll happen too is the money will dry up. The rich guys who are bankrolling all this stuff, they're going to say, well, wait a second. We don't want our name in this. And that stuff will dry up. Because in the United States, you probably wouldn't know this, Nick, but the way that this works is rich people give money to all these phony baloney nonprofits, and they launder it through other nonprofits. And before long, it ends up on the street, bankrolling Antifa, BLM, and all these other groups. Well, you can crack that code, and that's where litigation comes in. You sue somebody and go, okay, you're being paid by XYZ nonprofit. Okay, we're going to go to them and say, we're going to hold you liable because you got deep pockets. That's how you have to go at it. So, I mean, that's the next step. And you know, it's not going to be easy, though. It's going to be hard because all the people on the bench, you know, they have certain preferences for certain things. And, you know, we're just going to have to overcome that, too.
Yeah, that's the Kyle Rittenhouse, Nick Sandman thing. I mean, that's a good way to go. Now, of course, obviously, neither of those two are actually fully in our pocket, right? Like they're what we would call magapedes or something like that. But it's still nice to see because it's a good way to get money. I mean, you know, it's there's investing and then there's suing, and those are the two best ways to make money.
Actually, the best way to make money is marry it.
Well, yeah, sure, right.
My advice to young guys is find a rich woman.
I think the best way to make money is to seize power and become part of the government and then extract rents from the suckers dumb enough to keep working.
Sure. Right. Like, that's the Warren Buffett strategy. You know, everybody always thinks that Warren Buffett made his money by investing wisely, but no, he didn't. He made his money, using his father's connections because his father was a congressman.
How else do you make money? I mean, obviously, with any serious money I've ever made in my life, it's been done using my parents' connections. I mean, I was talking with someone today in a group chat. I think it was MW Public. What do you think? How do you think money is made? You know, suckers go out there and make barely enough to feed their families, and you skim off the top if you're the government. That's how you make serious money. Anything else, you're just it's just wankery. Oh, and invest in Bitcoin, of course.
well, I mean, like, you know,
I just remembered who I'm talking to.
I feel like you're handicapping children if you lead them to believe that we live in a meritocracy, right? Because meritocracy is a complete myth, and obviously the ruling class, you know, the elites, they benefit from teaching everybody that we live in a meritocracy because they want everybody to think that the way they got where they are is through waking up at 4 a.m., hitting the gym for 2 hours every day. And, you know, they make up all this nonsense, right? It's not true. Most people get successful through connections, good luck, being in the right place at the right time, or reading the right stuff at the right time. That's the way I did it. Like I just happened to be reading the right stuff at the right time. You know, I don't view myself as particularly intelligent or particularly hardworking. I just was reading and absorbing the correct information at the correct time. Now I feel to a degree, I feel almost like I kind of hit lightning twice because I feel the same way about pro-white politics, right? Like pro-white politics is still kind of niche right now. And I feel like I'm reading it. I've been reading about it for a few years now. And it's like, it's a nascent movement. It's a growing movement. And it's got a long way to go, you know, and I feel like we're on the precipice of this exponential growth of that particular thing. And, you know, the way you know it is that what are the smartest people looking at? What are the smartest people reading about? You know, that's the way you figure out the future. That's the way you predict the future. If you want to know what's going to happen in the future, you look at what the smartest people are reading and talking about. And in our case, currently, it's dissident right politics.
Right. That's very interesting. I like what Dinica's Ghost is saying in the Odyssey chat, that going to the gym directly correlates to financial gain. Lol. Well, yeah, it does. You know why? Because you got time to kill between sets and you talk to other guys and you start talking to them about business and you build connections.
It's true.
I made a lot of business deals, you know, in my shorts at the gym.
So I know. No. I mean, there's different types of people that go to the gym, right? Like, there's the idiots who just go there and they swing weights around. They don't really know what they're doing. They're not sticking to a plan. And then there's the people who research it and who actually know the correct method and the, you know, the proper form and all that stuff and the proper diet. And those are the ones who tend to be the people who are also able to be successful in other areas of life too. But, you know, I mean, you can make muscle in both ways, but one way is a lot harder than the other way.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. It just reminded me of something is that in a lot of ways, our kind of politics has been debilitated by the fact that we don't apply the rules of our regular life to politics. You know, the reason why so many weirdos are been able to sneak in is that no one bothers to ask basic questions like, what do you do for a living? What's your life been like to this point? Does the arc of your life actually make sense? You know, if you move into a, or, you know, some new guy moves into your neighborhood and, you know, he tells you his name's Bob and he doesn't have an explanation of for what he does for a living, but he's in a nice house and then his kids call him Joe for some reason. You're like, you know, you're going to say, wait a second, there's something not adding up here. This guy doesn't make sense. Yet in politics, if that guy shows up and he agrees with you on one thing, people are sending him money, super chats, follow him on, you know, Twitter and Telegram and everything else. And that's how they're so easily suckered. You know, there's that guy, what the heck is it? Jack Murphy, the guy with the ornamental beard who has turned out to be gay porn cuckoldry.
His name is John Goldman.
Exactly. Goldman. I mean, and here's the thing. This guy was charging people, men, $100 a month for advice on how to be a man. Now, look, I never really got into any of that stuff, but I'm pretty sure that gay porn kind of falls outside of the how to be a man category, you know?
Well, you know, the gay porn is, and he's also did apparently cuckold porn, and he was the cuck, not the bull. Like, he and his wife, they did porn where she was getting plowed by other dudes. He was jacking off to the side. And, I mean, for fuck's sake, man! You're like, maybe the you have sex with guys for money, but the cuckold thing really just.
Here's the thing: this guy was he got something at the Claremont Institute. He gets brought in as a Lincoln fellow.
That rings a bell.
Yeah. No. If you ever, you know, that's the thing. If you ever feel bad about yourself or your own life, just look at Jack Murphy and think, you know, oh, you know, it could be worse. But I mean, heck, even somebody like him can still make a small fortune. I mean, you know, that's the thing is like, don't, you know, I mean, people want to give their money away. They really do. And, you know, you can tap into that.
Well, I think what we, you know, what we've learned by these things is to say, you know what, let's make sure that this story of this guy's life actually makes some sense. You know, I mean, it's one of the reasons I talk about my work life and I talk about those kinds of things because it fills in the story of who I am. So people would say, okay, you know, this is not just a faceless voice on the internet or some,
right,
you know, pen on, you know, because it's because one of the things, you know, in business is that people buy from people. You don't buy product from a company, you know, unless it's some generic thing, you know, of course, you know, but you buy from people. You want to buy from a good person. And that's why salesmen, you know, the salesman who shows up at your door in the business world, he could have the greatest product in the world. It's fantastic. It's cheap and everything else. But he's drunk and he's dropping F-bombs and he grabbed your secretary's ass. You know, I'm not buying it from that guy, you know, but the other guy comes in and he's busting his balls to try and make a deal. And it's not as good or a little bit more money or whatever. You go, you know what? I'll give this guy a chance. Maybe he'll get better. It's just human nature.
Yeah.
And we got to do the same thing in our politics. You know, we have to think of ourselves as salesmen and you know, that's, and of course we also have to be skeptical, teach our people to be skeptical and skeptical of us too, you know, hold us accountable. But, you know,
I got some oceanfront property in Arizona, and you are my friend. So I know Z-Man, Carl, and Nick. I know you guys are up for buying my beachfront property.
Well, it will be oceanfront in a couple of centuries, I believe. Or maybe you're referring to the ocean of hurt, which is going to descend upon America in the year 2022.
But here's the thing. Here's the other thing that's going to – this guy Murphy, he's not going to go away. See, that's the other thing that we've got to kind of wrap our minds around is that – I mean, look, people do things in their private lives that are private, and I'm a big believer in separation of private and public life. We should respect people's privacy, you know, and that's normal, I think. But if something in your private life sneaks out, most normal people have shame and they say, I will go away now and hope that people forget it, or you move, you know? I mean, if your neighbors find out that you're bringing dudes home for the wife, you know, you say, well, okay, we have to move now. You know, I mean, I can't go out anymore. You know, that's a normal person. But these guys don't. They're shameless, you know?
No. Yeah, Jack Murphy, he'll be back within 6 months. I guarantee it.
Yeah, he'll be on the Ben Shapiro show. You know, I mean, that's what will happen. Because, I mean, now that, you know, they all know they're on the same team. You know?
Did I think some embarrassing fetish come out about Cernovich as well? And any of the
MAGA
whores, these blondes with fake tits and MAGA hats. I mean, what's her name? The woman from South Dakota who was discovered having an affair. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, she was also having an affair. And there they are. They're talking about family values and how liberals are destroying America, all of a while they're being unfaithful to their husbands, which is basically the core of degeneracy. Like, we can live with maybe, you know, how many, 2% of the population being homosexual. We can even live with the trannies. But it's really the dissolution of male-female relations which is killing us, not the... And these quote-unquote conservative women are out there flouting their tits and their whatever for basically money on the internet.
Well, I think didn't somebody figure out somebody figured out that there was actually a modeling agency or something that would find porn stars and that conservatives were actually recruiting people from that agency. It's kind of stunning that they were doing that, but they've discovered the link. Somebody discovered a link.
Yeah, I think that was the National Justice guys, interestingly enough. Okay, a little birdie tells me that the Z-Man has to leave us for the time being. And so, Z, I want to thank you for being part of the greatest, the best year ever, Writer's Block Extravaganza. Do you have any closing words, sir, for our fine soiree?
Hey, thanks for having me on. Happy New Year to everyone. And I'm sure I'll see you guys next year. Hopefully, all this COVID stuff calms down. I'll make it to the Balkans. I'll finally discover what Macedonia. I was almost going to say North Macedonia, but what Macedonia. what Macedonia has to say. So, all right, got to run, guys. Thanks for having me. Happy New Year. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. I'm very touchy about the N-word, so please let's not dip that. Well, I'm in a good mood. Well, anyways, that's the Z-Man, guys. And we were talking about the model. Yeah. These people are basically, I believe the expression is straight out of Central Casting.
Right.
how is it that people fall for this?
Yeah, and the other weird thing, you notice Candace Owens, that she ended up getting with some British white guy. And to me, that was very suspicious because that's just like, it's kind of out of left field. I didn't know much about Candace Owens before that, but it just seemed kind of contrived. You know, it's like, oh, look, our based MAGA-peed American girl is... you know, getting with a white British dude who's also happens to be in Conservative Inc. It just is. This is like some CIA stuff. You know, it's like the kind of thing that you would plot out. I don't know. I don't believe they have a real relationship, but then again, who knows? I might just be paranoid.
Well, you know, it's if there's one thing we've learned, it's that white guys have insanely high SMV, sexual market value, in a multiracial society. I mean, the women of every race, they like white guys. It's a fact. And Candace Owens, she's very rich from boomer money. So I guess she can afford a white guy.
Yeah, nobody's going to hold her feet to the fire. You know, it's too bad she didn't go for one of those guys who missed the kick at the football game, one of the three lions.
Yeah, it's one of those days. Now, what are they going to do with all that money? I mean, Countercurrents, we broke our fundraising record this year. We actually raised more than our fundraising goal, $19,000 more. But nice. it's still a shoestring budget compared to the money that Conservative Inc. works with. And yet, what are they doing, and what is Countercurrents doing? So that's something to chew on. That's something to think about. But I think it's time we wrap the show up. So, Carl, if you would, if you have any closing words.
Buy Bitcoin. Keep stacking it. I think 2022 is going to be an awesome year for Bitcoin. I think it'll be, I think we'll see Bitcoin well into the six figures. So, yeah.
Right. I'm going to try and do that. And Full Moon, my brother, you were back where you belonged on the writer's block for, how long has it been? I don't really keep track. Have you anything to say before we close this off like old times?
Nick, you're like a brother to me, and I'm so proud of you. You're doing such a great job on the new, the improved writer's block. It's professional. You've got great guests. Your skills and talents as a host are not surprising, being that you're the future ruler of Macedonia. I'm so proud of you. You're doing a great job. And Nick, you're carrying the torch and keeping the flame blazing. I'm so proud of you, brother. Congratulations and Happy New Year to everyone.
Thank you for that. Now, I'm going to read out some of these donations we've had on DLive. We've had Alaska Chaga donating 3 Ninja Guineas. Well, thank you for that, kind sir, and thank you for producing your fine product. It's what keeps me in good health.
Drink Alaska Chaga. I have it every day. It's very good for immune system and cold showers.
Excellent. Excellent. We have 4 diamonds from Donskoy 2. Well, thank you for that, sir. That's greatly appreciated. There's a diamond and an ice cream from Old Man Yinzer, the customary 14 lemons from Slog. And how do you say 14 in Finnish? I keep forgetting it. I do.
Elliot Oyster.
Elliot Oyster. Excellent. Excellent. I'm getting better. I'm getting better.
Keto Slog.
There has been other donations, but they have just whizzed by because, well, that's just the nature of live streams. That's just the nature of chats. And Full Moon, would you do me the honor of, ending the writer's block? Well, just like we did back in the old days.
Thanks to all the great people in the chat watching. Thanks to everyone, all of our great guests that came in. Guys, I want to know, everyone should know that, yes, we can have it all. We can have ethnic sovereignty with white European solidarity, with a whole lot of fun, a whole lot of positivity in doing so. So until next time, guys, stay safe, stay positive, have a happy, safe new year. Most importantly, stay happy, people. We'll catch you next time on the Writer's Block.
Happy New Year, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.